Chapter 15. Rose like a phantom wand, and in his fixed face I could see, lit by a lurid shine, the drama reenact which he had died incarnate in for us, and more. And doubtless he beheld it too in mine. Astart, as at once lightly known, and with an indifferent air we passed, without a sign being shown that, as it real were, a memory acted scene had thrown its tragic shadow there. The death of regret. I opened my shutter at sunrise, and looked at the hill hard by, and I heartily grieved for the comrade who wandered up there to die. I let in the morn on the morrow, and failed not to think of him then, as he trod up that rise in the twilight, and never came down again. I undid the shutter a week thence, but not until after I turned did I call back his last departure by the upland there discerned. Uncovering the casement long later, I bent to my toil till the gray, when I said to myself, ah, what ails me, to forget him all the day. As daily I flung back the shutter in the same blank bald routine, he scarcely once rose to remembrance through a month of my facing the scene. And ah, seldom now do I ponder at the window as heretofore on the long-valued one who died yonder, and wastes by the sycamore. In the days of Crinoline, a plain tilt bonnet on her head she took the path across the leas. Her spouse the vicar, gardening, said, too doughty that, for coquetries, so I can owe at ease. But when as he had passed into the heath, and gained the wood beyond the flat, she raised her skirts, and from beneath unpinned, and drew as from a sheath an ostrich feathered hat. And where the hat had hung she now concealed, and pinned the doughty hood, and set the hat upon her brow, and thus emerging from the wood tripped on in jaunty mood. The sun was low, and crimson faced as two came that way from the town, and plunged into the wood untraced. Dot dot when separately therefrom they paced the sun had quite gone down. The hat and feather disappeared, the doughty hood again was donned, and in the gloom the fair one neared her home and husband dour, who conned calmly his blue-eyed blonde. Today, he said, you have shown good sense, a dress so modest, and so meek should always deck your goings hence alone. And as a recompense he kissed her on the cheek. The Roman gravel mounds, by Rome's dim relics there walks a man, eyes bent, and he carries a basket and spade. I guess what impels him to scrape and scan, yea, his dreams of that empire long decayed. Vast was Rome, he must muse, in the world's regard, vast it looms there still, vast it ever will be, and he stoops, as to dig, and unmine some shard left by those who are held in such memory. But no, in his basket, see, he has brought a little white-furred thing, stiff of limb, whose life never won from the world a thought. It is this, and not Rome, that is moving him. And to make it a grave he has come to the spot, and he delves in the ancient dead's long home, their fames, their achievements, the man knows not, the furred thing is all to him nothing Rome. Here say you that Caesar's warriors lie? But my little white cat was my only friend. Could she but live, might the record die of Caesar, his legions, his aims, his end. Well, Rome's long rule here is oft, and again a theme for the sages of history, and the small furred life was worth no one's pen, yet its mourner's mood has a charm for me. November 1910. The workbox. See, here's the workbox, little wife, that I made of polished oak. He was a joiner, of village life. She came of borough folk. He holds the present up to her, as with a smile she nears, and answers to the profferer, 'twill last all my sowing years. I warrant it will. And longer too. 'Tis a scantling, that I got off poor John Wayward's coffin, who died of they knew not what. The shingled pattern, that seems to cease against your box's rim continues right on in the piece that's underground with him. And while I worked it made me think of timber's very doom, one inch where people eat and drink, the next inch in a tomb. But why do you look so white, my dear, and turn aside your face? You knew not that good lad, I fear, though he came from your native place? How could I know that good young man, though he came from my native town, when he must have left there earlier than I was a woman grown? Ah no, I should have understood. It shocked you that I gave to you one end of a piece of wood whose other is in a grave? Don't, dear, despise my intellect. Mere accidental things of that sort never have effect on my imaginings. Yet still her lips were limp and wan, her face still held aside, as if he had known not only John, but known of what he died. The Sacrilege of Ballad Tragedy, circa 182. Part I have a love I love too well, where Dunkery frowns on Exon Moor. I have a love I love too well, to whom, ere she was mine, such is my love for you, apostrophe I said, that you shall have to hood your head a silken kerchief crimson red, woe finest of the fine. Apostrophe apostrophe, and since this love, for one mad moon, on Exon wild by Dunkery tore, since this my love for one mad moon did clasp me as her king, I snatched a silk piece red and rare from off a stalwart pretty fair, for handkerchief to hood her hair when we went gallanting. Full soon the 4 weeks neared their end, where Dunkery frowns on Exon Moor, and when the 4 weeks neared their end, and their swift sweets outwore, I said, what shall I do to own those beauties bright as tulips blown, and keep you here with me alone as mine forevermore? Apostrophe apostrophe, and as she drowsed within my van on Exon wild by Dunkery Tor, and as she drowsed within my van, and dawning turned to day, she heavily raised her slow black eyes, and murmured back in softest wise, one more thing, and the charms you prize are yours henceforth for aye. And swear I'll never go, while Dunkery frowns on Exon Moor, to meet the Cornish wrestler Joe for dance and dallyings. If he will to yon cathedral shrine, and finger from the chest divine treasure, to buy me eardrops fine, and richly jeweled rings. Apostrophe apostrophe, I said. I am one who has gathered gear from Marlberry Downs to Dunkery Tor, who has gathered gear for many a year from mansion, mart and fair. But at God's house I've stayed my hand, hearing within me some command curbed by a law, not of the land from doing damage there. Apostrophe apostrophe, whereat she pouts, this love of mine, as Dunkery frowns on Exon Moor, and still she pouts, this love of mine, so cityward I go. But ere I start to do the thing, and speed my soul's imperiling for one who is my ravishing, and all the joy I know, I come to lay this charge on thee on Exon wild by Dunkery Tor. I come to lay this charge on thee with solemn speech and sign. Should things go ill, and my life pay for butchery in this rash assay, you are to take hers likewise, yea, the month the law takes mine. For should my rival, Wrestler Joe, where Dunkery frowns on Exon Moor, my reckless rival, Wrestler Joe, my love's possessor be, my tortured spirit would not rest, but wander weary and distressed throughout the world in wild protest. The thought nigh maddens me. Part 2. Thus did he speak, this brother of mine on Exon wild by Dunkery Tor, born at my birth of mother of mine, and forthwith went his way, to dare the deed some coming night. I kept the watch with shaking sight, the moon at moments breaking bright, at others glooming gray. For 3 full days I heard no sound where Dunkery frowns on Exon Moor, I heard no sound at all, around whether his fay prevailed, or one malign the master were, till some afoot did tidings bear how that, for all his practiced care, he had been caught and jailed. They had heard a crash, when 12 had chimed by men the beast of Dunkery Tor. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.